Hey, guys.
Hey, Sean.
Hey, Sean.
So I think we know what the theme is for this week's podcast. Am I right?
Do we?
Well, I was just thinking it's kind of obvious. It's small deals that end up being big deals and big deals that end up being small deals.
I see where you're going there. You mean like the confirmation vote in the Senate this week normally would be a tiny deal turned into a big deal.
Yeah, and like the veto overrides in the state assembly. Technically a big deal, but practically speaking, kind of a small deal.
So what about the special session on guns that was supposed to happen?
I mean, I was thinking that would be like one of those big deals that ended up being a small deal.
Well, did it not end up being a big deal, or was the fact that it wasn't a big deal kind of a big deal?
Interesting question.
Well, let's try to unpack that one. This is the WPR Politics Podcast. I'm John K. Wilson.
I'm Sean Johnson.
And I'm Laurel White.
This week, let's talk about big deals and small deals and deals that were big because they were small. So what are the big deals that happened this week and the little deals and the deals that were big because they were small?
Well, I think the, man.
We all look at Laurel.
Laurel.
Tell us about these things.
It's like a tennis match and I'm the whole match. Just heads pivoting.
That's so bizarre.
Yeah.
That's good.
Okay. Where should we start? Do you want to start with the big deals or the small deals?
Let's start with the normally small deal that ends up being a big deal. Because normally we do not do really stories about confirmation votes in the state Senate because they're sort of a foregone conclusion most of the time.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like obviously we cover when a cabinet secretary is confirmed, right? You know, because these are important people in state government, they oversee these departments. But normally it's not more than, you know, a couple sentences of, you know, the Senate voted today to confirm so-and-so, they're the head of
the such and such
department.
Agency.
And yeah, that sounded a little Dr. Seussian, didn't it? So-and-so
big
from
deal,
the such.
Small deal.
Right.
We got a lot of Seuss going on.
Red chamber, blue chamber. Get it? Politics.
I believe they're both red chambers.
Yeah, they are both red chambers. But yeah, so this week, the kind of that that normally kind of perfunctory, I don't know, just kind of coverage that's just like little, became a much bigger deal because of some pushback between the Republican legislature, particularly the Senate, and the Agriculture Secretary, Brad Paff.
And let's set this up a little bit more, right? The governor makes these appointments to run cabinets. And it's the Senate, I mean, under the Constitution, they have this authority that they can confirm or not confirm. It is the advice and consent of the state Senate, right? But you don't have to get that confirmation vote to do your job if you're a cabinet secretary. So there are cabinet secretaries in Tony Evers' cabinet right now that have been doing their job without Senate confirmation. Actually, these cabinet secretaries up until this past week. It's just the Senate does have that power to fire the cabinet secretary if they take that vote and the vote ends up being a no. And that's what happened this week with Paff.
And I think kind of to punctuate what you said there, this is something that hasn't happened for a really long time. We actually don't know exactly when the last time a cabinet secretary was fired by the state Senate. We know that for sure it hasn't happened since 1987. That's as far back as the Legislative Reference Bureau checked for us. I talked to them earlier this week before this vote happened because there was a lot of conversation about, you know, how unusual this was for the Senate to actually hold a vote to fire a cabinet secretary. When I called them on Monday to ask, you know, kind of about the timeline, they said, we've checked records up to 1987. If you want to come and look through our files prior to that, you're more than welcome. And, you know, everybody can have a date that's further back than 1987 to reference.
I thought you meant like you can bring a date to our archives and it'll be a fun time.
I mean, it would be easier with a date.
Dusty
I would assume.
Papers.
You could, if anybody out there needs a date idea and you want to go to the Legislative Reference Bureau and try to check and see
it's
when the last time they fired.
I'm like, look, we've done our due diligence here.
If you want to know more,
be our guest.
Yeah, come check the logs if you want to go back further.
Bring that special someone.
Yeah, exactly.
We do appreciate them looking back to 1987.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. Yeah. So it's a really unusual thing for lawmakers to vote to fire somebody, because like you said, Sean, I mean, they can continue serving in the capacity and they do without any vote at all. So oftentimes if there isn't support for a particular cabinet member, they'll just kind of like let them continue on, right, without necessarily firing them. They just won't take that step to say, we approve of this person.
Right.
But they had had so much conflict with PATH that they decided that they wanted to make this like extra public statement of, you know, we want this guy gone.
So yeah, do you want to lay out sort of what the conflict was there a little bit?
Yeah, so this first started several months ago when PATH put out a press release after the budget committee had delayed some funding for a farmer suicide prevention program. He was really critical of Republican lawmakers and said that the Department of Agriculture only had enough money to give five more farmers in Wisconsin these vouchers for mental health care. And so he said, you know, Republicans, do you want to choose which five farmers we help? You know, which five farmers' lives we're going to save, essentially. And that got really heated with Republicans. They said he shouldn't have been talking about it that way. They sort of said it was disrespectful and kind of flippant, and that he was politicizing the issue in a way that they really didn't like. So that kind of set off this really, there were, you know, public statements and press releases that went out about that, kind of pushing back on PATH. And that set kind of the train in motion, I guess, for what ended up happening this week.
Then there were some other issues, too, that they were disagreeing about, right, aside from the mental health funding?
Yeah, so I think that was the really big one. But I think, you know, when Senator Fitzgerald was talking about this on the floor, he said there were a number of other issues you could point to. He didn't get super specific outside of the suicide funding. And one other thing, there were these proposed rule changes within the Department of Agriculture for large livestock farms and manure storage that a lot of Republican lawmakers were really concerned about. And so he said that was another reason that a number of members had issues with PATH. I think, interestingly, and the governor confirmed this, DOA, I shouldn't call it DOA because that's Department of Administration, Department of Agriculture actually backed off on that proposed rule and said that they weren't going to move forward with it last Friday. And Evers confirmed that that was kind of an attempt to appease Republican lawmakers that were concerned with PATH. So they were also pointing to this manure storage rule, but that has a little bit more, I think, nuance to it in terms of kind of the complexity of that. But yeah, that was another issue.
And so then how did the debate and the vote on this go?
So this was I feel like there were a couple layers of the unprecedentedness of it all, because not only had there not been this kind of vote, and we knew that the vote was kind of going to play out the way that it did because Senator Fitzgerald had told us there just aren't the votes here. So we knew that was kind of coming, and that was really unusual that this voting down of a secretary was going to happen. So everybody's kind of paying attention for that. And then lo and behold, we notice on the other side of the opposite side of the Senate chamber from where reporters are sitting, the governor has come in and has sat down and is listening to the debate in the Senate chamber. And it was a very...
For me, that was like a jaw-dropping moment. Like, oh my goodness, the governor is in the Senate. I know that sounds ridiculous, but it never,
it never happens.
Happens.
Goodness.
Yeah.
I know. And actually, I was in the newsroom when that happened, and we were kind of joking, like, I bet you he's just sitting there, like, grinding his teeth mad, and he's going to, like, flip over a table or something, and... because that's obviously not the Tony Evers persona. But lo and behold, Tony Evers was kind of mad.
Yeah.
It
was interesting because, everybody noticed, all the reporters noticed that the governor's over there. A lot of talk about, oh gosh, you know, when is the last time that a governor has come down to listen to Senate debate. You know, reporters that have been around for a while were talking about when was the last time they've ever seen this, if they have ever. One reporter actually asked Senator Fred Risser, who's been in office for 57 years?
Yeah, long. It's getting closer to 60 here now,
yep,
right?
Yeah. Long time. He said that he didn't have any memory of a governor actually coming down and listening to debate like Governor Evers did. So you're watching this happen, watching someone sit and watch debate. This is what qualifies for riveting,
okay.
I guess.
Trust us.
Tell me more.
But Senator Fitzgerald actually went over and shook the governor's hand at one point. Saw that happen. Senator Erpenbach, a Democrat, introduced the governor. People stood and applauded for him in the room. Not everybody, obviously. Or perhaps not, obviously.
No, I actually didn't know that. Some people didn't stand to applaud.
Yeah, yeah. I can't tell you who exactly, okay. But it wasn't the entire Senate.
Just
that stood
another layer of awkwardness for the whole thing.
Yeah, it was an odd thing. And then, you know, as I said, he shook the senator's hand, and everyone's kind of like, "Well, this is an odd moment because, you know, we're about to have this really unusual firing of a cabinet secretary and the governor's here and they're having this moment." And anyway, the vote happened and then we all go out to talk to the governor to hear what he has to say about this. And it was a Tony Evers that I have never seen. And I think a lot of Capitol reporters have never seen.
Yeah. Because he has, we've heard him in speeches before, kind of throw in where he's obviously reading from a speech. Mm-hmm. Like I'm thinking about it, the speech he gave at the Democratic State Convention when he's trying to get the base, like to think, I am the one candidate among these nine other Democrats that that you want to choose because I got this fire in my belly, and he dropped a curse word in that.
Didn't
speech.
He say? Can we say damn on the podcast?
I'm going to allow it.
He said GD, I believe, was the full
okay.
thing, which I don't think we probably should venture into. But in this situation, it was like a different Tony Evers. This was unplugged, basically. Actually, and we can play a little clip here of Governor Tony Evers from after that Senate vote.
And to think that they're going to have to keep their mouth shut for the next, who knows, 4 years in order to get approved by this Senate, that is just absolute bullshit.
So some definite cowboy language there.
Exactly, cowboy language.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of, he was so clearly upset. One of the first questions that reporters asked was, what are you going to do now? How are you going to move forward with leadership of the Agriculture Department? And his response was, I don't know. I'm honestly so PO'd right now that I can't even think about, I'm just so PO'd about the fact of what happened today. And then, you know, the governor has kind of these holy mackerel phrases that he uses, namely holy mackerel.
Yeah.
In the evolution of this press conference, he said, hell's bells, which is a phrase that I hadn't heard someone say, but he, you know, it was emphatic.
I'm just thinking of the AC/DC song.
Yeah. Yeah. And then he got to that quote, the little clip that we played. So this was a governor that was very upset and made it really personal, I think, about Brad Paff, even though he did say, you know, I don't want to make this about Brad. He talked about kind of the implications for the other cabinet secretaries, but he did say, you know, essentially Paff is going to go home tonight and tell his kids that he got fired because of something that he said. And that shouldn't be the case. That's the message that the Republican legislature is sending to those kids. And, he, you know, he's talking about kind of the chilling effect on the other, it's eight other cabinet secretaries that haven't been confirmed yet, and sort of how they might change how they're doing their job now for fear of being fired by the Senate. And it's kind of looking like that might be a possibility for four of the eight remaining. So now we've kind of crossed this threshold of, you know, that hasn't been crossed for at least 30 years, and it could be happening more than once. I think Senator Fitzgerald went on and talked with a reporter earlier this week, but after the vote happened, and said that I think his phrase was, a storm is brewing. So
I just want to add, I think this was, You know, there's some news stories, Laura, where I feel like I get to give you that. I hate to be the first person to drop this term on the podcast, but that old man Sean Johnson, you know, context that like, well, this happened like back in 2000.
Well, Laurel, let me tell you a little story about how I've seen this in the past.
But I haven't seen this before. This is new. You were there for like, I feel like this was sort of, in a way, I think we'll look back on this vote as sort of a turning point in a way. I mean, Wisconsin government has already changed quite a bit over the past decade or so, but in the past, the Senate would always just kind of defer to the executive. They would say, look, we may disagree with you, but the governor gets to pick the governor's people. And we respect that. When it's our turn, our governor will pick, you know, their people.
We'll pick their people. That was kind of.
And this, they decided, no, not this time. And, you know, so this is a real turning point moment in state government and will not be forgotten for sure by anybody in that room. And I know some Republicans did mention that, like, look, there have been other confirmation votes where all the Democrats have voted against them. You know, something that Senator Dewey Strobel mentioned, that there have been cabinet secretary confirmations for Governor Walker while the Democrats voted no.
Kathy Stepp.
Yeah. Right? And it's just.
It was the DNR secretary.
And who knows what would have happened, like, if Democrats were in the majority when Kathy Stepp went through. We don't know. But I will say it is different when you are in the minority party. You get to vote no on pretty much everything. It's a different ballgame than when you're in the majority. And in this case, the majority made a conscious decision that, like, we're not just going to defer to the executive.
Well, we could go on about this for a long time, this small deal turned big deal, but there were also some big deals turned small deals that might be big deals. How's that for a segue?
That was great, man. I totally lost track of the deals. Just everything's big and small now.
Yeah. Well, I think so. The big deal that turned into a small deal that we wanted to talk about is the veto override votes that the assembly had, right?
Right. And they're a big deal in that they don't happen very often. So this was your first veto override.
Yep. I think these were the first.
We're doing the old man challenge.
Now I have context for this one. I knew it was going to happen here, Laurel, because I've covered veto override.
Yeah.
Before. Doyle was governor and they had he had a Republican legislature, they would do this all the time.
Yeah. But I think since we're talking about how long it's been since some of these things have happened, the Associated Press reported that I think it was 9 or 10 years since the last veto override vote. So this is also something that hasn't happened for a while within the time frame of old man Sean Johnson. But
I guess what...
what are the deets? So what are the deets?
The deets is they need a 2/3 majority to override a governor. And what were they specifically trying to override him on?
So these were three proposals that Republicans said they were all kind of tied together because they all had to do with mental health in Wisconsin. So the first veto, partial veto of the state budget, these were all in the state budget, was vetoing $15 million for a mental health crisis center in northern Wisconsin. It redirected the money from that proposed facility to the Mendota Mental Health Center in Madison. The second veto removed the budget committee's oversight of Medicaid reimbursement increase in Wisconsin. So under the budget passed by lawmakers, the Medicaid reimbursement increases were going to be overseen by the Joint Finance Committee. In his partial veto, the governor switched that so the increases would be overseen by the Department of Health Services, DHS. And then the last veto was removing some criteria from a grant program for mental health professional training. The governor said that the grant program, as prescribed in the budget, just had too many specifics. And so he kind of gave more discretion, again, to DHS to kind of decide what the qualifications were going to be for those grants.
So there was a little drama in all this because Republicans have a 63-seat majority in the assembly. They only needed three Democrats to join them in order to override these vetoes. That number changed based on who was there in session that day. I think Laurel told me it ended up being like they needed to get two Democrats in the end, but they got zero. So the drama wasn't quite there. And I mean, I think the thing to remember with all these veto overrides is, yes, Republicans would be, they put them up for a vote And they had it in the budget that they initially passed. So, yeah, they'd be happy to win on these votes. But for them, there's like a political victory, even if they lose, and that they force Democrats to take difficult votes on these things, especially on the mental health for northern Wisconsin.
We talked about polling motions on a podcast not that long ago and sort of how Democrats do those to have debates about things that they want to bring into the spotlight. In the legislature, I feel like this was kind of a Republican equivalent of a polling motion. They brought these things out of the budget so they could have a conversation about how, particularly that first partial veto, how the governor diverted money from this northern Wisconsin mental health center to Madison, because we know that's a narrative that they talk about a lot, you know, concerns about the governor taking money from other parts of the state and putting them in Madison and Milwaukee.
And how about the other small deal, big deal, big deal, deal?
Yeah, I believe Laurel's direct quote, which I like so much that I wrote down.
Wrote it down.
Quote, did it not end up being a big deal? Or was the fact that it wasn't a big deal a big deal? I think that sums it up pretty well, because the governor called a special session for two pieces of gun control legislation. I think the average person hears the governor called a special session. That means the legislature has to get together and debate what he called the session on. And
nope.
No.
No.
What
the,
the
governor can't compel them to physically be there, really, or to talk about specific things. The only thing that they have to do when the governor calls a special session is actually have like one person there to gavel in and gavel out. And that's what they ended up doing, because Republicans fundamentally disagree with the two proposals that the governor wanted them to talk about. And they didn't come up with any other gun bills that they wanted to vote on during the special session.
And we had a little sound of how that special session
the
went,
assembly, right?
Yep.
The hour of 2 p.m. on November 7th, having arrived, the assembly is in special session. Gentlemen from the 5th.
Mr. Speaker, I move the assembly stand adjourned pursuant to SJR 1.
It's a non-debatable motion. All in favor will say aye. Those opposed, no. The ayes have it. The assembly is adjourned pursuant to SJR 1.
So there you go. That was the special session. If you blinked, you might have missed it there.
Yeah, that happened at the end of the regular session.
And in the Senate, it was just Senator Fitzgerald by himself gaveling in, gaveling out, done.
Yeah, that one was about 30 seconds, so slightly longer than what you heard from the Assembly, but yeah.
So I like your take on this, because it not being a big deal kind of ends up being a big deal for people who want these bills.
Yeah, I mean, there were protesters in the Capitol. There were protesters on the stairs. There were protesters in the rotunda. You know, Democrats.
I feel like we could Dr. Seuss this too, like protesters. are there protesters in the House? There were
protesters with
protesters
a mouse.
Up here. Protesters down there.
Yes. I think
protesters everywhere. There you go.
All right, carry on. I'm sorry. No, just trying to keep that Seuss theme when we can.
Yeah.
Go on.
Yeah. I mean, so it was a big deal for a lot of people, and it was a big deal in terms of, you know, kind of the debate that's been happening for several, I think it's months now. I mean, this was something, these are proposals that Democrats have introduced, and then the governor has had press conferences about, calling on Republicans to have hearings on or to take public positions on. And I think a big part of the Democratic pushback yesterday was, we want Republicans to come out and own their positions on these issues and debate them and publicly say where they stand. The Democrats' argument is Republicans are kind of skirting having to take a public position as individual members by not showing up for this debate. And in the governor's estimation, he says that's going to hurt them at the polls at the next election, because according to, you know, public opinion surveys, these two proposals are really popular. So,
and then on the other side of that, though, Republican leadership has come back and said, you're only doing this because it's politically popular.
Yeah, they're saying that, you know, the governor's politicizing the issue, Democrats are politicizing the issue, they're not genuinely trying to look for common ground. After he did the quick convene adjourn motion in the Senate, Senator Fitzgerald said, you know, the governor knew that we weren't going to support these bills. He knew that this wasn't going to happen. So I think there's a sense from Republicans that it wasn't a very genuine attempt by the governor to get something done, that it was sort of a political ploy.
So it feels like the veto override and this are kind of both the governor and the legislature flexing their muscle here. Like, we know we're going to lose on this veto mm-hmm. override, but we're going to put your members in a tough spot. And mm-hmm. the governor, you know, I'm sure knew how this special session was going to go, but he's going to put them in a tough spot.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like everybody's getting along great at the Capitol.
Yeah, best of friends.
I think there's going to be some caroling for the holidays.
'Tis the season.
Lots of holding hands like the Who's in Whoville, and I just feel that coming for us.
Yeah.
I sense it, and it will be beautiful.
Well, let's just wrap up this whole deal right here. Sean Johnson is WPR's Capitol Bureau Chief.
Laurel White is WPR's Capitol Reporter.
And John K. Wilson is our resident politics nerd.
If it's only the best podcast content you seek, subscribe to our show for new ones most weeks on Apple or Google or some app for podcasts, or go to wpr.org/politics for all our shows of the past.